Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $80 million and sent out over 18,000 grants to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. As always, endurance lives here. It is always an honor to get to chat with the world's greatest coach when it comes to endurance sports. He has had, five Ironman World Champions, with two by Chrissy Wellington, three from Daniela Reif. She's won three in a row. Daniela's won three in a row. Nicola Spierig has the gold medal from 2012, silver medal for 2016. The list goes on and on and on. Brett Sutton, how the heck are you doing?
Well, Bob, for that night, I'm feeling a little humble.
You know what, hey, Coach, seriously, every time I talk, when I'm interviewing Siri Lindley, I'm going, oh, Siri was coached by Coach Sutton. When I'm talking to, you know, Emma Snowsill or any of these athletes, over time, the tentacles from your coaching, they spread pretty wide in the world of endurance sports. Congratulations on all that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I've been very lucky to work with some great athletes. And it's the reason why I feel humbled, because you need the athlete ability to get the results. It's just about channeling their great strengths into the right direction. So, yes, everybody you mentioned has been somebody that I've been happy to help in some small way.
So talk a little bit about, you have also a number of great coaches who work as part of Trisotto. Talk a little bit about your other coaches, and I think Robbie's with you today, right?
Yeah, so that's what I thought I would do. I'd introduce the secret weapon that people don't know that sits behind me, but I have two coaches that work with me as assistants. So basically, in our coaching setup, we have something a little unique, whereas our athletes not only have me as a coach, but they also have a personal assistant. And I find that's been a great help. It definitely has kept me in the game. As we talked in 2012, I was going to retire and go do age group athletes. And then Nicola decided she wanted to keep going. And then she introduced us to Danny. And then before we know it, we're up and going again. And I really don't think I could have kept going if I didn't have Robbie and Susie as my backup. So I brought Robbie along today. And so he's here having a listen, Bob.
I love it. And Robbie, I know that you are intimately involved with the island coaching that happens with someone like a Daniela in Kona. Talk a little bit about, as a defending champion now, she's three-time defending champion, how that's changed. The first time Daniela came over, she had just, you know, won 70.3 worlds, but she came over as, you know, it's sort of new for all you guys, right? And you showed up, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday of race week. Talk about that first experience to where it is now when she comes over to the island as the multiple-time defending champion.
Well, Bob, what we tried to do is we didn't want to rush her along, but it was a little bit like Chrissy. Sometimes your horses are extremely good, and from the moment we got her right, we could see how strong she was. So we always concentrated to, you know, we wanted her not to lose her confidence, because after the Olympics, she had a very rough time of it. So for 3 or 4 years there, you know, she had a lot of problems, and I just thought they were confidence problems. I thought we'd bring her back nice and gently and put her in the longer races rather than the shorter ones. And so we went from there. So we basically put her in, to be honest with you, Ironman Zurich. She was in it in 51.50. And I cajoled her and rang the race organizer and got an entry on the Wednesday before the race, and let her know on Wednesday that I wanted to do the Ironman. And, of course, that was the beginning of everything. So being a very, very, shall we say, headstrong young lady, she definitely wanted to do the 51-50, so we decided that she'd do the 51-50 on the Saturday, have a nice sleep, and then she'll do her Ironman debut on the Sunday. and it was quite funny, actually, because I got into trouble with a couple of the policemen, because at the halfway, I think you might remember, there's a place called Heartbreak Hill.
Yes.
And at the 90K mark, and so she was going around, as she come around the corner, and we're going up the hill, and I'm running alongside of her, saying, "What are you doing?" She said, "I don't know how to pace this," and she'd lost 9 minutes on Natasha Badman and two other girls, and they're very good girls, you know that. And, of course, I ran the 200 metres up the hill saying, "Pull your finger out, now get going." She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Now go for it from here." And then she put 9 minutes back in on the second half of the bike, and I realised this is something special, Bob, and that was it. So basically what I wanted to do is, you know, we went with Chrissy, different circumstances. I think she would have won the race. So to get second was wonderful, but it was more I didn't want to take her there. I didn't want to get her over height. I didn't want to have any pressure on her. So what we did was we aimed up at Mount Tremblant, which I think was the world championship.
Yes.
We did a great job there. And then we bounced over to Kona. We did a little heat camp. And then she had mostly, well, in my mind, there was one or two mistakes. But apart from that, it was mostly the greatest race I've seen anybody do in the Kona. You know, it was everything up to, it was up to Chrissy's debut. So while everybody says she got beat, I was more than happy with it. And as you said, after that, everything changed. Last year, we really went after Kona. We had a marvelous result. We had an uninterrupted year. And she did a lot of Ironman training. We had a little debacle in Australia at the 70.3. It was our first disagreement in our relationship as far as this is what I think you should do and you should do it. And I didn't want to go to Australia. I wanted to concentrate on Kona.
Yep.
And anyway, she went to Australia and had a bit of a, you know, a bit of a false start. But it helped motivate her. So she came back, trained the best 6 weeks she's ever trained, and then had the greatest female Kona race of all time.
Well, she shattered the course record. It's not often that you see somebody come across that finish line, and you know there's the whole photographer well, which is a 50-yard or I don't know 30 yards behind. It's not often that someone finishes that race and is still going so fast that they that you almost need a rope to catch them from going into the photographer's group. She was going so fast. She wasn't stopping at the finish line. Like she had so much momentum, she was flying. That was she looked that good.
And she, and believe me, she was that good. You know, there was more under the tank. So, she's a phenomenal athlete. And this year, I'm told to be not too controversial, but, you know, these athletes shouldn't have to qualify. The winners of the Kona should not have to qualify.
I agree.
So, of course, so she could get ready for the 70.3 because she wanted to come back, and as you've seen in the media, she was getting plenty of hype about, oh, she's lost the speed and she's done this and she's done that. And we sat down and she said, I really want to go to the Chattanooga race and show everybody how good I can be in the half Ironman. So to do that, we had to qualify early. And she had a little problem and then we had to go qualify. And then she struggled for at least 3 months with a rather severe back problem. And so the season was always about playing catch-up,
right.
Always about getting ready. People said, well, why, if she's injured, you put her in, put her in rock. People don't understand. You need to have that base behind you. If she didn't do rock, no risk for her to go to Kona. And because I had to get her ready for the half Ironman, I knew after rock I had to sharpen her up. So I used... Well, I don't want to be disrespectful to challenge, but I used it as a training session.
Sure.
And so she did rock to get the 180K ride in. She was under instructions to just run as she could. If there was any strain on her back, we were going to pull out. But she handled it really well, and then we totally focused on Chattanooga because I was very excited that, you know, I give the WTC or Wanda now a hit, I'll give them a pat on the back. I was so happy to see that Chattanooga, that the women had their own race. For the first time,
yes,
we had a real world championship. So, of course, I thought, well, that's fantastic. And I waited for him to say the same thing about Kona. It didn't happen. But anyway.
But it might.
Well, it should. There's no reason why it should.
Right.
It's just bloody goodness.
Yeah.
You start the women at 12 o'clock, and they'll still finish before 300 age groupers, and they get their own race. So I don't understand that, but that's okay. That's up to them. But the bottom line for me was, this year was all about Chattanooga. And then after Chattanooga, you know, obviously, then she's in the Triple Crown.
Yes.
She's got three sub-116 runners waiting for her at Bahrain, you know, to try to knock her over in the shorter race, and they're all fast ITU X girls. So we didn't go after the Kona race like what we will in the future, because we've already had our discussions. Once we're through Bahrain this year, we're going to take two steps back. She will rest, and then we will just focus on Kona next year and try to come up with the real, you know, see what she can do. So that's the plan, Bob, and each year it's been a bit different. The first year is about have a look. Second year is about, you know, we had no problems, let's really give it some. This year, she was beset with problems. I just think she showed the champion she is, because anybody that's trained with her knows the problems she's had. And then to come up with a performance like she did was just totally professional. And she was feeling the pressure of the third time. You can't get away from you guys. You know, we try to keep it low-key, but everybody comes up. And then she, you know, she started to feel that. So I was very proud of her. We're back in camp now. She's come back just actually yesterday. So we're back in Cyprus at the Aliathlon, and we're getting ready to try to have a decent race at Bahrain and take care of those speedy girls on the run.
Well, and there's that I remember when we were talking to Daniela and Robbie in Kona. The reality is that, you know, Kona was important, but there's a $1 million prize based on winning Dubai, winning the Chattanooga, and then if win the Bahrain race, then that's a few more dollars than winning Kona.
Well, yes, and while we don't go for the dollars, because she wanted to win the half Ironman so badly,
right,
that basically made our mind up. So, and I thought, you know, she's a phenomenal athlete, and I'm not disrespecting anybody. But for her to have any chance in Bahrain, I couldn't really give her 12 weeks of Ironman work, if you understand what I mean.
Absolutely.
Going into and that's what you can't do. The way that the system's set up now, and that might be fine because I just want half Ironman people to win the half Ironman and Ironman people to win the long one. I'm fine with that. But, you know, Danielle is the angry bird, and she's also the greedy bird. So she wanted to win both world championships in the same year, and I'm just very proud she did.
So when I look at the race this year, there was a point, and obviously the key, we saw it on the men's race, right, with Cameron Wirth and Lionel Sanders and Sebastian Kienle basically attacking Jan and taking away his running legs, really. And if you, with Lucy Charles and Lauren Brandon, they obviously are thinking, if the bigger gap we get on Daniela, we're moving not just away from Daniela, but from the other gals as well. It gives us a better chance to finish, you know, and on the podium, which certainly worked for Lucy. There was a point, though, where Daniela had to make a decision. She was still 5 minutes back, and she had to make a decision to, do I just stay here because I'm a better runner than the other gals, or do I try to make up that deficit in the last 40K, which she did. Were you concerned when she made that move to try to close that gap?
No, because I, you know, I come from a swim background, Bob, so I understand swimming.
Right.
And when you're an 8th-grade swimmer, you're just a phenomenal athlete.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, well, I won't call Lucy a phenomenal triathlete. She's a great athlete. And so you have an engine. So there was no, you know, that was one of the little problems I think Danielle and I have a bit of falling out with afterwards. I told her she'd be 4 minutes behind. She didn't think that was possible. I told her she wouldn't be leading at the halfway mark. So, of course, in her own mind, she thought, oh, he's a cynical boy. You know, and so, to be quite honest with her, I can tell you now, her tactics were to swim with the main swim pack, which she did, and then not go too hard the first 40K when everybody's trying to push on, go around the corner and start building from the 90K mark. And so, and then the last 40K, her written goal was, we're going to try to break 63 minutes for the last 40K. So that's what she did. It was just the fact that Lucy was having such a great day and had a good swim, and she rides really well. So she was doing what she does best, because people said to me, boy, you must want to sort the bike out. I said, Danny rides 4:52.
Yeah, no, she had a great ride, yeah.
And then, of course, when she did get close enough, she made sure that Lucy now knew that she had to fight for the podium and not worry about winning anything. And she went straight past her as hard as she could and then set herself up to run. And you know, for me, it was just a really, really professional performance where someone put it to her and other people would panic. She was panicking but keeping to control. She didn't decide to go after her early when she realized the other girl was actually putting time on her, Bob.
Right,
first,
I know.
Put some time on her. And so to hold herself together was, for me, an achievement, and shows you why she's so hard to beat. She's like Nicola. They're both really astute tacticians. And if you give them a game plan, you don't have to worry. You can go to bed and go to sleep. They'll carry out the game plan no matter what's happening. And I think that was the greatest attribute we've seen this weekend. And we've seen another part of it where, you know, under severe pressure, not being at a top, she still kept it cool. And that's what made me realize what a great performance it was.
So Robbie is there, right? Robbie's with you?
Yeah.
Robbie, talk a little bit about what you felt in terms of pressure for Danny and more people wanting to spend time with her during this week than compared to the first year you came over with her.
Well, we've become good friends over the last few years. And excuse me, I'm talking too much at training camp here, but as you know, the first year we came in late, and really it was Wednesday evening by the time we got our bike.
Right.
Before Saturday race. Now, of course, nobody really knew who she was because she was from Switzerland, and so she was really under the radar. Now, of course, when she got second that year, it's built since, and we do what we can to minimize the impact of the stress in terms of interviews and photo sessions, but also to be fair and equitable to everybody as well.
Sure.
But of course, like all athletes, it does affect them. And one of my roles, of course, is to be there and to, in fact, just be there and be around and make sure things work and things happen. And I'm best mates with the mechanic at SRAM, because when she gets nervous, it means I have to go and visit him with her bike again.
Right.
And of course, we see him often. And that was part of my role is the game plan. As for Alyssa, she's fantastic, just rock solid. But during the race, I still make sure I'm on the course at the right points, so I can say, look, I'm the tool, relax, find your rhythm, eat and drink.
Gotcha.
And that's all she needs.
Love it.
So I might be like in the background, I'm there when she needs me.
So, Coach, what I was going to ask you, did you want to follow up on that, Coach?
Sorry, Mike, I didn't hear you.
I was going to say, I wanted to talk a little bit about our man, James Conema. And I know he hadn't been training with you that long this year, but he certainly had his success before when he was fourth. I think he was working with you back then and then came back and surprised himself. This year, the impression he gave me was, this year, Brett and I, we're just feeling this out, right? We haven't had that much time to train together, and he got fifth, and I could tell he was over the moon with getting that fifth place because he feels like, okay, I get it now.
Yes. Well, it's a confirmation, because our problem is, Bob, and that's one of the things when you ask me how I feel, at the moment I feel, very frustrated, and as you know, when we talked about the coaches, I've now started our own coaching certificate, and we run our own syllabuses, because it doesn't seem, no matter how many years I keep producing these results, people think we're lucky. And it rubs off on the athletes. You know, I've had to give Danny 2 or 3 days of washing all the rubbish of Kona out of her head, because it's amazing to me that people come and tell her that she should swim differently. She, you know, you bike fast if you do this and that. You know what it's like.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you've got a coach that does stuff, which I believe is the way to train triathlon, and I make no apologies, I think I'm the only one that's getting it right. Everybody else is wrong. Well, then I'm the arrogant guy. And it doesn't seem to matter how much we do result-wise. You've seen Nicola come back again, and she was at, the Super League, and boom, 15 weeks after a baby, here she is running along with the best girls in the world. as I said, I'm frustrated but excited, because we've started the coaching courses so we can coach the coaches, because the coaches want to learn. They really want to learn, and I find what happens with the other coaching syllabuses, they're not triathlon syllabuses. They go to the swimmers and say, what's the swim syllabus? What's the bike syllabus? What's the run syllabus? And then that becomes the triathlon syllabus. And so they don't realise at Trisotto, our coaching director is the guy that actually wrote the first level 1 and level 2 for triathlon for Australia back in 1995. And when it became the norm of, oh, we're going to the Olympics, all the European countries, I still remember the Americans being down there looking at what the Australians were doing. Because if you remember in those days, not like now, Australians were dominating everything.
Everything, yep.
And we've already had a coaching syllabus, but people don't realise it today. I helped him write the level 2. So we just get frustrated because all the updates now is all done through the different federations. So the Cycle Federation goes to the Tri-Federation and says, this is what we do. They don't realise triathlon is totally different. And the good news is Robbie's putting together what we're calling What is Triathlon Really? Tour. So we're going to do that. I'm going to do that over the winter period. We've got about 5 or 6 whistle stops where I'm going to go and talk to age groupers and just say, this is what we do, this is why we do it. So not to get people changing, but so everybody knows there is an alternative. And so if the first one's successful, we'll do 2 or 3 more of them, and it's my goal to get to every triathlete that's an age grouper and say, there is another way. And that's how we've looked at it. And James, and why I'm saying that is because, see, that's the thing with James and a few others. They get to a certain stage, they're going great, and then they look over the fence and say, maybe if I was doing this, maybe, we only run every second day. We only bike every second. Nobody else does that. So, I know we're getting the results, but would we get better results if we went back and did the 6 and 7 hour rides? And so that's what happened with James and me when we fell out. It wasn't, we never fell out as per people, but it happens with a lot of athletes.
Sure it does.
They get it in their head that they'll find the extra 2% by looking for something different. And so what we did with James is, it only took us 5 months with James?
Five months.
Because I already knew what worked, and he's a difficult guy to train because, see, James is a big man. But he's a big man, and but he's aerobic. So, of course, all I did with James is when I looked at what he was doing, he shortened up his long stuff and his slow stuff and fastened it up, and he fastened up the rest of it. So, basically, this might sound a bit funny to all your viewers, but I slowed him down.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
We set up. Yeah, we're not going to do so much fast stuff. Steady up. And his faster stuff, we did over a lot shorter distances. And so when he went fast, he went very fast. When he went slow, he went very, very slow. And we could see the transformation in the first 6 weeks. I said to Robbie, I said, this bloke's flying. He's going to come back to hand really quickly. And, good luck to James. It was his work that did it. And he did so.
Yeah, I was just about to say, James, when he came back, he was a different James. He really did the work. He listened. He did every single exhaust to the letter. And some of the work I saw in that pre-Kona camp that we had in Maui, it was just unbelievable what he did. I've never seen anything like it. And he was brilliant. And we really look for more next year.
Yeah, you know, so it was good because before we used to debate stuff a lot. But James is not a silly triathlete as far as I mean, like just a moron. He really goes into it and thinks about it. He's got a big scientific bent to him, and sometimes that becomes a hurdle for him because you know. But when he came back, he didn't have a lot of time, and he just got down. And I said, "This is what we're going to do." I think he was surprised. We never had one argument the whole 6 months, and it worked out well. Now he was able to move at his fifth. You know, I'm not like that, but I was happy that he was happy. You know what I mean? And so, yes, I think in next year we give him a nice break now, and then he's starting to go to work next Monday, and then we're going to aim up and. We want to see if we can match the big boys on the bike. And if he matches the big boys on the bike, they won't match him on the run, I can tell you that. So, you know, I'm very happy for him, and I was very excited for him because I think he was thinking it was all passing him. And I think now he sees that his career is just all in front of him.
Love that. So, yes, the other day, Gwen Jorgensen, the Olympic gold medalist, announced that she's going to move to the marathon. As a coach...
Yes.
Who's, you know, Nicola's is yep. Jumped in the road racing and done very well in that. Yep. What were your yep. thoughts when you saw that?
Well, I'll preempt a blog that I'm putting out in 2 days' time because I've got about 5,000 people asking me. So I just wrote. I said, people forget Gwen has been an athlete all her life.
Right.
Both with a scholarship and a run scholarship and then did the running and then come into triathlon. And so she spent 8 years. It's not an overnight success as people look at it. So I didn't find it a trouble at all. And the fact is, she's never been a, and I'm not being disrespectful, but she's not a triathlete. She's like Chrissy. She come in and because of ability over the top, she went. She never thought about doing Ironman. And then she's had a child. She's been married and had a child. And I know with Nicola, the time factor of being the Olympic gold medalist is just sucked out of you. So for her to try to keep doing an Ironman or keep doing it at the present moment would be very difficult, where a runner does about half the hours, a marathon runner does half the hours of triathletes. So I just think it was a logical step. We've seen it before she said it. And Nicola's saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, well, you know, Gwen won't be here. I'm quite sure that when she has the baby, if it all goes well, you know, she'll look to do what we did. Because remember, that's all Nicola did too. She went and ran and she qualified for a national team and went to the European Championships in the marathon.
Yes.
And so, for me, I don't think it's... I think it's a logical step. So, do I think she won't be at the 220 Olympics? Well, again, that's another coaching talk because I see the ITU girls at the present moment with the advent of all the American swimmers and the English swimmers. I see it going back to Barb Lindquist days where there was Loretta Harrop and Nikki Hackett, if you remember back then.
Sure.
The good American, what's her name? She went up...
Sheila Tormina.
Yeah, and boom, they were on the bike, and here, get this into your four great swimmers and put 3.5 minutes into everybody, and then we got Loretta to outrun them all. So that's what... But I see it going back to that ball.
Oh, you
and
see...
I've already
yeah.
told I said, don't do triathlon. You're not going to put a pool in your backyard because they're going to be swimming much, much faster. I see the 220 belonging to a pack of six swimmers up front. And, Jamie Turner's a smart guy. Maybe he's thinking exactly the same thing. And the two girls won't be in that pack. And so they're going to have to ride up if they want to be successful again. So, it's for me, how we go through things. Nicola and I have sat down and gone through a fine-tooth comb. We've looked at what's going to happen in the next couple of years. We see Lucy Hall. We see the other English girl now mm-hmm. hitting podiums. And then you've got the girl from Bermuda that had a big season. She's a good swimmer.
Yeah, Flora
at the
Duffy.
Moment,
yep.
She'll outrun those girls if they've got 2 minutes head start. You know, both of them, you've got four Americans that are all ex-swimmers.
Yep.
That are fantastic swimmers. So as they get better on the bike... the wet runners are going to be in trouble, I think, in the next 4 years. So, as I said to you, I've told Nicola she needs to get a swim pool at home because I'm going to make her swim in it all the time if she wants to be ready for 220. And I believe that to be so. So, I honestly think what she's done is a logical step. And, you know, I wish her all the best.
So one of the, when I look back at your, someone like a Daniela Ryf was seventh at the Olympics, and someone like Chrissy wanted to be an Olympic athlete. Yeah. And both of those women became the best iron women in the world.
Yeah.
When I look at, you know, a good friend of both of ours, Mr. Lukas Verzbeekas, and I look at him, and you did wonders with him after he broke his back, but you know, he's moved away from the sport. Is that a kid, if he became committed, that you'd see that he would do better longer distance than as a Olympic format type of guy?
I think the problem, Lukas is someone I'm still talking to.
Yes.
And, you know, just the American listeners, if everybody could send him letters and say, don't give it away, don't give it away, don't give it away, because he's your only male chance in the next 10 years. He's that good.
He's that good.
But he hasn't got over his injuries. And so some days, Bob, I see a flicker of brilliance that me and Robbie would say, my God. So, you know, he'd do some, and I don't mean just on the run. Like he started this, we give him a swim stroke that we laugh a bit about because Robbie broke his back and his arm. And so we changed his technique, and then people in America started giving him rubbish about that. But he needed to do that because if he swam properly, he couldn't do it. He kept breaking down.
Right.
So he got his right. I was very proud of him because it's hard to do that. So he changed his technique, and then some days he just did sessions, and he went, oh, my God. But then his injuries would come back on other days, and he couldn't run.
Right.
And, you know, very sad. How sad is it to see a guy one day pump out four 400s in 56, and the next day he's doing them in 94. And that was too heavy for him at that stage. He's young, and because he spent his whole life winning, that winning is his words, that's all he lives by, so if he couldn't win, I don't want to do it. I understand that, because he's had 8 years, 10 years of just, that's all that matters in his life. And I'm just hoping that he's going to uni at the moment. I'm hoping he does 1 or 2 years. I've started talking to him again, because, you know, I think he can go to the Olympics. Bob, we can talk about going along, but I'm sure he could go to the Olympics. He just, you know what I mean, he just needs time, whether it's this one or the next one. I have no doubt if he had time and wasn't so hard on himself, he's a very good athlete, very, very good athlete. And I don't think, I don't think he's physically finished. I think father time will help him with his problems. And I think he's just got to be putting himself in a situation that when Father Time does help him that way, he's ready to go. That's my worry. You know what I mean? That he'll get to 30 and his body will come good and he'll say, my God, you know, I'm 16 stone and lifting weights at the gym. I'm a power athlete. You know what I mean? That's my worry.
Yeah, the cool thing for him right now, I like the fact that he's been doing weight training. I think that's going to eventually help his back, and then it's a matter of leaning out and getting back to triathlon shape.
I totally agree. So we're both on the same board there, and I don't want to put any pressure on him, but, you know, we're putting together, as Robbie and I, we're changing direction. It's exciting times for Tri-Sato for next year, so we've actually opened up and putting a squad back together again, rather than me just training the few of my old guys and Nicola and Danny. We're starting to build a squad.
Nice.
Pro athletes. And I wrote to him and said, there's always going to be a spot there for you if ever you want to come back, you know. And I can say publicly now, another guy that we'll need some help with, so if there's people out there listening, Andrew Yoder's coming back.
Nice. And, well, that's good.
Let me tell you, if I can just get him in the right spot, he's a very, very good athlete as well. So, and he will be going Ironman. So he won't be looking at going short course. So we're very excited to have Andrew on. And unfortunately, he had a car accident about 2 months ago. So his comeback's been put on hold a little bit. He broke his elbow or his shoulder, and he got a stress fracture in the hip. And I'll just let you know, Bob, that America's not going to be devoid when their older fellas move on from Ironman. I think Andrew Yoder is going to step up into the breach. I've just got to take him along nice and steady. He's another boy, not unlike Lukas, that we're in too big a hurry.
Right.
And as he's got more mature, he understands more about himself and his life. And I think, you know, we've taken the long-term view. I've spent a couple of months with him as a 19-year-old. I spent a couple of months with him as a 21-year-old. But now he's come back home and said, I'm ready for the long haul. Can you get me on the podium at Kona?
Wow.
And I said to him, I'm sure I can. So that's where we are there, Bob.
So, Coach, over the years, I mean, you go back to coaching boxers and horses, and how have you changed? How have you adapted to the new athlete, to the new training techniques? So from the very beginning to now, how have you changed?
That's a big question, because there's three types to that. One is I haven't changed at all.
Right.
As far as our early experiments. So when I came into the sport at 1990, it was a very interesting time for me because I was new sport. I wanted to experiment, and I did that. And I did that with the national British coach, actually. Ben Bright was my first triathlete at 14 or 15. And I often tell people that without Ben, I wouldn't have had the success I did, because unfortunately for Ben, or fortunately for him, he went to the Olympics. He was my guinea pig, and I made a lot of mistakes on Ben. And he was man enough to accept that, and he was a great athlete, and now you can see he's the manager of the British,
well,
the best ITU team in the world. That doesn't come because you're a stupid guy. He's a very, very learned guy, and so I'm very proud of that. But we learned a lot. So from a technical point of view, we're doing very similar to what we did then. And he laughs at me when he comes over to St. Moritz, and yes, with Robbie. Robbie will tell you, he sits down the other end of the pool and he laughs at Nicola because he sees the same session that they used to do. He said, "But we were doing that 20 years ago."
Doesn't change, right?
Yeah. So from that perspective, nothing much changed. I had to change when I was training Swiss athletes. If I treated them like I did with the Australians, there would be no Nicola Spierig and there would be no Daniela Ryf. I was a much more my way of the highway guy back in 92, 97, 2000. Loretta Harrop, when I holiday at her place, always gives it to me that I've got soft. She said, "You're not the coach you were, you know, you wouldn't put up with all that rubbish." But, you know, I think I'm less authoritarian than I used to be.
Yep.
I'm more inclusive. I think I'm a better coach because I can handle not just the untalented ones and make them good. I can handle the talented ones better now. So, you know, and as I said, Robbie's added an extra dimension because I've never been a geek on the mechanical side and the engineering side. So basically, I've got a walking encyclopedia. When we discuss things from that perspective, wattages and all that stuff, I've got my sidekick here who's an expert at it. So what we've done is try to cover the goals, you know, and I'm not so great on the internet. So I've got Susie there, and so now I look like a walking computer machine. I pump out programs, and I've got stuff. It looks wonderful. It's like a presentation. So, you know, we've really rounded it off and tried to work out how we can give everybody the best possible coaching experience. And then we did that with the camps as well. So, you know, St. Moritz is 1,800 meters in altitude, so we get that. And we usually have a heat camp. And this year, Robbie took the camp to Maui.
Yes.
Because we wanted to have a little bit of an experiment. We couldn't go to Kona because the bird, you know, people are looking in her bag at Woolworths seeing what she's eating. So to keep her away at Maui, and then it's a little jump in. We've usually come out of Asia, but it's a nice 11 and 12-hour flight, so it's a bit hard. So this year we thought we'll Chattanooga help that. We couldn't bring her back to Europe, get her ready, go to a heat camp. So what we decided to do was do Chattanooga and then keep on going. So she landed over in Maui, set herself up. Robbie went over there and just kept a low profile and made sure that everything was working quite clockwork. And then we, you know, we were proud enough to have our new coaches now starting to kick goals. You know, I think you interviewed Cam Rock.
Yes, we did.
That's right. I trained his wife when she was 15. I trained Cam when he was 19. So, you know what I mean? It's been an overnight sensation as a coach. Yet we've been going now for 20 years. So it's made me very, very proud to see his athletes go so well. and it gave me as much satisfaction of watching Cam do a great job of coaching as it did the athletes. And that's what I want to do. My future lies in trying to educate coaches. And then there's nothing more that I'd like to see. That, you know, one or two of the Tri-Sato coaches knocking us over at the Kona venue. So that's our goal. And as I said, we're doing that now. And, you know, we're having success at it. I think we're improving the standard of triathlon. And so, you know, we're proud of that. So, we're very busy, Bob. But now it's not a Brett Sutton show anymore. And that's the thing. I've got help in every aspect, you know. And, you know, you've met Tom.
Yep.
And so Tom runs the business and does it extremely well. And he'll have some exciting things on his own to talk to you about in the new year. It'll knock your socks off. So you'll want to be talking to Tom Sutton, not Brett Sutton anymore, very soon. And then Robbie helps me. And Susie looks after the administrative side. So I'm basically free to just coach. So I don't think I've ever felt happier coaching than I do at the present moment.
So for this, you mentioned that you're going to be doing a tour. You're going to be doing, taking Tri-Sutto on the road and talking to age groupers.
Yeah.
When will that be happening and where will you be going?
Well, we'll be going to Asia. So basically I'll be going to Asia and then I'll go back to my old stomping ground in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at people or clubs that would like to host the tour. At the present moment, so that's going to be, I'm going to do stuff in Europe at the present moment, and then around March, April, we will go to the United Emirates. I usually go over there each year to one of the Emirates and have a talk there. We've set up a coaching base there with Matt O'Halloran in Qatar, so we will go over there, and then from there I will bounce to Asia, and then we'll find a club and a venue in Singapore or Kuala Lumpur, somewhere there that's very interested. And what I'm doing in the talks is, you know, we have a heading that says what triathlon really is. And what I do is I pull the sport apart and let people have a look at how I view triathlon rather than what their perception is. And then from there, I will go down to Australia. We might try to see if we can do one in the top of Australia. Then we go down to Sunshine Coast. One of the coaches we used to have in Team TVB, unfortunately, died of cancer last year. And so we're going to put him a memorial camp on in his pool. So if the name of the camp's a bit rude, you must understand it's about the man himself. You know, he was a great guy. And so what we're going to do is put a camp on for 20 athletes on the Sunshine Coast in May. And we'll name it what he used to say all the time to his squad. I'm very sad to have to do that, but I'm very proud to do that. And then we're going to go down and hopefully do a talk in Sydney. And then from there, Melbourne. And then from there, I'll go to South Africa. So we hope to do a talk in Joburg and maybe one of the other places. And then from there, back to Europe.
Love
and then
it.
Back to train everybody and get them all ready to go again.
Wow. You're going to be a busy guy. I love everything you're doing, Coach. And you know what's so funny when you mention that your athletes are being told, you know, hey, you know, this you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. And I remember interviewing Dr. James Gills, who owned the Ironman, and he was the number one cataract surgeon in the world. He would do 30 to 50 operations a day, right? Imagine what he was making. But there was a lot of people in the industry who would say that he was doing too many operations and he was reckless. And his, when I asked him about that, he goes, Bob, anytime you stick your head above the crowd, someone's always there to take a shot at you. So, I mean, the deal is your record stands for itself. Your results stand for themselves. So you are the preeminent coach in our industry, getting people like a Chrissy and then Daniela and so many others, making them the very best in the world and having them learn about themselves. They didn't come to you going, I want to become an Ironman world champion. They came to you wanting to be a better Olympic athlete. You saw something in them that they didn't see in themselves. And that, to me, is the real art of a coach.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the things we say in our coaching team is I'm trying to help them learn the art. There's plenty of science out there from everybody else, but what we try to do is show them how their on-deck demeanor and how to look at athletes, how to get the most out of the athletes. You know, every athlete is an individual. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard that before with other the athletes. That, you know, James, we don't have any group sessions. The only time we go group is at the pool. And then we might have four different swim sessions. So that's the stuff I'm trying to get across to people. You know, age groupers come to our group and say, "Where's, you know, we're going a long run on Sunday, and they want to know where's the group meeting." And I said, "Well, if you don't run at your own pace, it's of no use to you. So, you know, there's no good having 12 people there and two people are getting the benefit out of it. The other four are either going too slow or too fast." And it just, so basically, they're the type of things we're just trying to explain to people. And I try to get it across to people with the results we've got. But at the present moment, that doesn't seem to be sticking. Everybody just keeps looking for the clue. And the clue is, it's an individual sport that goes for 8 hours. And so, you know, there's different ways that you have to look at it. My techniques are not going to be taken from the pool swimmers. My bike techniques are not going to be taken from the cyclists. And our run technique is definitely not taken from the track runners, because I don't think people sit back and look and study and see what our sport really is. But when you jump off that bike, you've been working for 6 hours. How you run four laps around a track, to me, doesn't correlate. And as you said before, having worked in so many different sports, you understand that, if you understand what I mean. You say, okay, I realise that we need to look at this sport differently. And so what we try to do now is we do that with the camps. We hope if there's interest in America that I might go back to Kokomo. But people have to, you know, write in and say we'd like a camp, and I'll do it. But if it's cold over there, I don't fancy doing it in New York during the winter. I could do it down in Cozumel, so everybody's happy. We have a nice little training camp down on the beach or something like that. So that's how we're looking at doing it at the present moment. I'm not being stuck in one camp as much anymore. The only camp that we really concentrate on as a group is the St. Moritz camp. And then we're in there from, say, the 1st of June right through till September. But everywhere else, we float around and we go to different places now, Bob.
Love it. Coach, thank you so much, as always, for taking so much time. I love what you guys do. Congratulations again. And I know the season's not over for Daniela yet. She's still got that Bahrain race. But pretty soon,
yep,
you'll be kicking off 2018.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking to me. I really appreciate it.
All right. And give my best to Robbie. Robbie, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate all your help every year in Kona. You're the best.
Thanks so much, Bob. And we'll talk in a long time before the next Kona, I'm sure.
I love it. Again, our guests have been Coach Brett Sutton and Robbie from trisutto.com. Again, this is Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Toughman Triathlon Series, VeloFix.com, ATVSwimSpas.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We just sent out $3.7 million in grants, 2,448 grants to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.